James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Is my creation! Life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast area.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well now, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Yes, I am Guy James, and we're coming to you live today from the beautiful sandy beaches and blue waters of Southwest Florida. And of course, we're streaming all around the country and all around the world, and we're very happy to be back in the chair here. Had a couple of weeks off, a little R&R, time to get a little personal, a few personal things done, and it's good to be back. It really is, and I missed you too. So thanks for joining us today. We hope to have a good show for you. We hope you'll help make it a good show by giving us a call. 866-546-5254. That's a toll-free call. 866-546-5254. And if you've got minutes to spare of any kind, you know, one of those calling plans, whatever, you can call us at 941-876-6896. And we would be more than happy to hear from you. A lot going on in the world today. Of course, all of you folks who live in Ohio and Rhode Island and Vermont and Texas are going to the polls today. I'm sure, let's see, I know Eric is up in Vermont. Eric is probably doing his duty as we speak, probably at the polls. One of the friends of the show, Eric. And, we've got some friends in Texas as well, and Ohio, and I'm not aware of Rhode Island listeners. If anybody is listening right now from Rhode Island, make yourselves known, okay, so that we know that we've got somebody from everywhere voting today. But I'm hearing that, at least in Texas, that turnout is very heavy. Probably not a surprise to anyone. And I would assume that it's probably pretty good. I know several of the counties that I'm very familiar with in Ohio had predicted a 43 to 45% turnout, which is pretty good for a primary election. Ohio is one of those states where you can go to the polls, and if you're a Republican, you can ask for a Democratic ballot and vote Democrat today, or vice versa. Who would do that? I don't think that's right. I don't like it when they allow that. And number one, I was talking to somebody earlier about it today. I just don't think it's right. Do what you want in a general election, but if you are selecting a candidate for a party, you ought to be a member of that party. It's okay if you plan on continue being a member of that party, but it kind of solidifies the support for the party. And I don't care what anybody thinks. We need the party. That's the foundation we stand on. Those are the building blocks, and hopefully we all can always find a candidate. We don't always, but hopefully we can get a candidate that represents the principles of the party. And so I think it should be just Democrats that vote. If we have all independents and a bunch of Republicans crossing over to vote, then how have we solidified the base? That's always a question I have. So, but anyway, you can do that in Ohio. You can walk right in if you're a Republican and say, I want a Democratic ballot. Of course, you have to say it in front of all your friends who are there and the poll workers whom you probably know in your local community, especially some of the smaller communities. So, I don't know. And, of course, in Texas, we've got that bizarre system. And of course, we're talking Texas here. You know what don't get me started. But they're having actually their primary election today, and then afterwards they're having a caucus, which decides, I believe it is 35% of the delegates. I don't know that there's a more difficult system in the nation than in Texas, but leave it to Texas to march to the beat of a different drummer. We are here in Southwest Florida. Of course, we don't have anything politically going on today, except there is some news that, there may be some news. Charlie Crist, the governor here, Republican governor, is saying that he would be amenable to having another primary so that the Democrats can get seated at the convention. Frankly, and I know many of you may disagree, frankly, I'm all for that. I don't believe in wasting money, but if they can do it in a cost-effective way, I would like to see the delegates from Florida be seated. Hey, I live here. We deserve to be represented regardless of what the idiots. And don't get me wrong. I understand some of why the party had this little revolt last year and got their asses thrown out of the convention, basically. I mean, here recently we had, on the local level, we elected our delegates, and I got to thinking afterwards, what do we elect them for? They're not gonna be seated. They won't be able to participate in the convention. But maybe, just maybe, something will be done about that. In Michigan and in Florida, we may have, at least in Florida, another election, and that would be fine with me. It truly would. You know, it's March here in Southwest Florida, and I don't know how many of you have been to Florida this time of year. I assume very many of you. The weather is absolutely spectacular. Today it's 78, 79 degrees, sunshine, slight breeze blowing. It's nice. Last week it was in the mid-80s most of the days. We've been having very, very nice weather, as usual, as we do this time of year. That's why everybody flocks to Florida this time of year. That's why we call them snowbirds. They fly south for a while during the warm weather, and the snowbirds, believe me, are here in full force. Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York, Illinois, Connecticut, just from all over the place. They're here. They drove here. They flew here. As usual, it's a mess. The roads are completely clogged. It's absolutely miserable just trying to drive anywhere. But they didn't bring as much cash as usual this year. The economy here kind of floats on tourist cash, and believe me, the tourists and the snowbirds didn't bring the kind of cash they normally do. I'm told the wait at popular restaurants is only an hour this time of year, as opposed to the two-hour wait of past years. And of course, the malls and the retail stores are experiencing an uptick in business, but nowhere near what it usually is this time of year. So one of the more ridiculous items I saw in the news today is in the Wall Street Journal talking about the Fed officials debating a recession risk. Recession risk? Go tell it to all the retailers around here. Go tell it to the retailers and basically across the country. Go tell it to the people who are losing their homes. Recession risk, my behind. One of the dumbest titles to a story that I think I've seen in a long time. You want to know if there's a recession? Go talk to the people. The primary election, getting back to that today, if she gets two wins, even if Obama gets a tie in delegates today, Hillary's going to take the race to May or June. I don't think there's any question about that. Projections still say the delegate difference will be about 50-50 the rest of the way from here on out, so Obama's lead will probably hold. And again, it's going to bring Florida and Michigan back into it. And the superdelegates, of course, what will they do? Unless Obama wins Texas big today, that might change their minds, the Clinton people, I don't know. But Democrats, by more than a 2-to-1 margin, this surprised me in the story I saw a little earlier today, by a 2-to-1 margin, more than a 2-to-1 margin, Hillary Clinton, Democrats say, should stay in the presidential race even if she loses either the Texas or Ohio primary on Tuesday. But if she fails in both, fewer than half say they want her to fight on, and I think that's probably a pretty good idea. And in Ohio, and there are three new polls going to give Hillary Clinton the lead. No surprise there. She's kind of stemmed the tide lately. She's kind of stopped the bleeding, I would say, in Ohio. Obama was closing in, and that seems to have stopped for the time being. Survey USA and public policy polling and Quinnipiac, of which two of them actually show Obama stalling. And in Texas, two polls show it to be a statistical tie. I know polls haven't been very reliable this primary season, but today's numbers may change that. We shall see. My prediction. Everybody got a prediction? If you call in today, give me your prediction. I would love to hear them, and I think everybody else would as well. I'm going to stick my neck out, and we'll probably get it chopped off here again, but I'm going to predict that Hillary Clinton will win Ohio by 7 points. I'm sticking my neck way out there. I'm going to predict Hillary Clinton by 11 in Rhode Island. Barack Obama's probably going to win Vermont hands down, maybe around 28 points, I'm saying. And I'm predicting that Obama will win Texas by 1 point. They may be up all night deciding who actually wins Texas, but we shall see. So that's nothing that almost everybody else isn't predicting in those first three states I mentioned. But I really think in Texas there's going to be a huge African-American turnout. It'll be huge. And I don't think any of the other segments, the Hispanic and the white vote and the women and all that, I don't think they'll be able to overcome that margin. So we'll see how that turns out. And there was some interesting news. I love to keep track of the Electoral College projections, and there are new rankings for five states, and this comes from Rasmussen. And they have mentioned that a surge in the number of people who consider themselves Democrats has led to five state changes in Electoral College projections for the Rasmussen Report Balance of Power Calculator, which currently projects 168 electoral votes as safely Democrats, 84 electoral votes as likely Democrats, and 32 electoral votes as leaning Democratic. However, when the leaners are not included, the Democrats lead 252 electoral votes to 189, and that's a gain of 14 electoral votes for the Democrats. Of course, you know you need 270 to win the White House. And eight states with 97 electoral votes are either a pure toss-up or slightly leaning to one party or the other, and these are likely to be the real battleground states of the 2008 election. Florida, I don't know. I don't know if Florida's ready to turn blue or not. Ohio, I think Ohio will. Virginia's a toss-up. Missouri, Colorado, Iowa, Nevada, and New Mexico. And the good thing is, if just Ohio, out of that entire group, out of that whole group I've just mentioned, if just Ohio turns blue this year, that'll give the Democrats enough to take the White House. So things are looking good for the Democrats. I like that. I'm a Democrat. Yeah, see, the Dow is making a real comeback as we speak. It was down around 211 points around an hour ago. Now it's down just 100 points, and it's on its way. It's recovering today. So that's an interesting note here today. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to call us and join the program today, we'd love to have you. I suppose that tomorrow we'll talk most of the day about the election results of tonight. I know the polls in Texas don't close until, 9 o'clock their time. So it's going to be a late night in Texas, especially when they have those caucuses for a couple of hours after the polls close. The caucuses go on, so it's going to be a very, very late night and probably into tomorrow, easily into tomorrow, until we find out how at least those 35% that are getting delegates that are given out in the caucuses are elected. So we'll see. It's going to be a long, long night, I suppose. We all ought to put the coffee on if we're really interested in this, because we're going to be up late. The Eastern, Ohio, I believe their polls close at 7, and Rhode Island or Vermont, one of them 7, one of them 7:30, I think. So we'll know the results of those three states fairly soon tonight, and it'll all come down to Texas a little later on. I assume that all of you have noticed that the campaigning is pretty doggone ugly this year. And Hillary and Obama are going after each other pretty well. But, hey, it's a primary campaign. And I don't mind. I don't mind at all if they throw a few rocks at each other. I mean, we're not going to have a nicey-nice. I mean, what'd be the point? First of all, the news media wouldn't even cover it. I don't think they would if they just sat there and agreed with each other all day long. And so there's always going to be a few rocks thrown. I think the media's made too much of the little bit of rancor that there's been back and forth between Barack and Hillary. I think the media's made way too much of it. I think it's, by and large, has been a very civil campaign so far, with far less vitriol than there usually is during a primary campaign. Nobody's done anything like Bush did to McCain in South Carolina in 2000. I mean, you're not going to see that kind of dirty politics over on the side of the Democrats. Not ever. I don't think so. 866-546-5254. Speaking of rough campaigning, I've been giving this a lot of thought, and talking about the right-wing smear machine. And we all know how effective it is. They have control of the media, as you well know. I don't have to remind you that, because, and it's important that they do for their side, because in a democracy, the power really lies in the manipulation of public opinion. Whoever controls the information prevails, and I think we all know who really controls the information in this country. That's why those of us little guys like you and I, we've got to yell long and loud to make our voices heard. And by the way, we are going to be making our voices heard coming up again at the annual Take Back America conference. It's a little earlier this year than normal. It's coming up the 17th of this month, and we will be attending that and doing our show from there, from Washington, D.C., for a couple of days. So we'll be there with lots of great Democrats this kind of year, time of year, and we'll be talking about that right-wing smear machine. And I've mentioned for a couple of years now to all of you that I had a great amount of apprehension about this coming election. A couple of years ago, I told you, and I realized that I knew this election season was going to be filled with a lot of apprehension for me. On the one hand, I was looking forward to getting rid of the most inept and immoral administration in our nation's history. I was really looking forward to that. January 20th of 2008, I've got one of those bumper stickers that just says January 20th of 2009. A lot of people, did I say 2008? I meant 2009. It's going to be a joyous day for America. You know, we ought to make it a big, huge celebration day and go out and celebrate in the streets. And New Year's Eve horns and the whole bit. And it's a day we could really look forward to, because as a nation, we could do a U-turn and just maybe start to repair the awful damage. And I mean awful. That Junior Bush has done to our country's reputation, to our economy, to our freedoms. And basically, after all the lies and corruption that have taken place during the Bush administration, maybe we can start repairing the moral fabric of the country as well. He's been a lousy example. You know, it kills me that back during the Clinton years, when Bill Clinton had his sexual dalliance and got caught. Oh, what about the children? what about the children? Well, I'd rather, frankly, I would rather have my kids find out about something like that than I would all the crime and corruption that's taken place under the Bush administration. Any day. Any day. I can explain away to kids that Bill Clinton did something he shouldn't have done, that was morally wrong in most people's eyes. He shouldn't have done it. He got caught. He should have owned up to it, all that. I can explain away a lot of that. But I cannot explain away the terrible lies and filth and corruption that's come out of this White House, out of this Bush administration. You could never explain that to a kid. So don't tell me, don't give me that line, oh, what about the children? But as much as I've looked forward to this election coming up, the other side of the coin is having to endure the savage, filthy smear campaign waged by the right wing against whoever our candidate ends up being. And at the time, when I first started thinking about this a couple of years ago, I was mostly concerned about the attacks that would be coming against Hillary Clinton, because we knew that she was going to run. We knew all along that she was going to run, and I knew they would be dirty and underhanded, and in some settings, listening to them and keeping quiet about it was going to be really difficult for me. It's not the fact that she was, she wasn't my choice. She hasn't been my choice. But still, I didn't want to hear the dirty campaigning and the lies and the innuendo that's going to take place. Now, just the fact that her name is Clinton, the fact that she's a woman, and believe me, I believe that's really it for a lot of people. Oh, they deny it, but the fact that Hillary Clinton is a woman, a strong and a powerful woman, is bringing out the very worst from the radical right wing. And I didn't think all along that I could stand it without completely blowing my top, and I don't like to do that. However, I was not prepared for what is surely coming now, and I think you can all see it. It's becoming evident that the right wing smear machine is all oiled up and ready to do anything and everything, and let me stress, anything. And when I'm talking about the right-wing machine, I do mean anything. Anything on God's earth that they can, anything and everything to defeat Obama if he's the chosen one. Right now it looks good for him. But if he is chosen, I truly believe that you're going to see a campaign against him that will look as if it came straight from the Ku Klux Klan, along with James Dobson, Pat Robertson, maybe even a dead Jerry Falwell. We're already hearing that he's not a patriot because he doesn't wear a flag pin. We've already heard that he's a closet Muslim and he was schooled in a madrasa, and that he'll take the oath of office with his hand on a Quran. We've already heard that he hates America so much that he won't say the Pledge of Allegiance. You've all heard those. And even if they're denied, and most of them have been by, and I put this word in quotes, responsible Republicans. Once you let the genie out of the bottle, you can't put it back in on this stuff. It's like a correction in a newspaper article that's wrong. You know, the headline screams one thing, and, you know, they put the correction back on page 6, and only about 5% of the people saw it on the front page. See, that's the way it goes with these things, these lies and these innuendos. I've been getting the emails a lot lately. I'm sure you have, the ones that accuse, and accuse is the wrong word. And forgive me for saying it that way. I don't care. I would not care whatsoever. Not a smidgen, not a little bit. Wouldn't make a tiny bit of difference to me if Barack Obama would be a Muslim. Make no difference whatsoever. None. Nothing. It mean nothing to me if he were. But he's not. He is a Christian. And you know full well why they're alluding to the fact that Barack Obama is a Muslim. He's a closet Muslim. They're using it to taint him. They're using it as terrorist tactics. Because all Muslims are bad, you know. All Muslims are bad. That Quran, that book, oh, they want to kill us all. That's why. They, you know, that's why they're using it, and they're going to keep using it. And if he's the nominee, they will use it right up until the last day before the election, and up until the time the polls open, they will use it. That one will not get put back in the bottle. And again, we this deal about the flag pin and that picture of him. Is there anyone amongst you? And I, you know, I fault Obama for getting caught. If you're a man running for president, you should not get caught with the Pledge of Allegiance being said with your hands hanging down in front of you. You shouldn't get caught doing that. And I don't know if I've ever done that. I don't think so. But if I have, so what? It would have been a mistake. It doesn't mean I love my country any less than I do. It doesn't mean I'm any less patriotic than I am. And you know, that's a fool's game right there to circulate that photo, and whoever it is circulating it. Does anybody really have any doubts that Barack Obama is a patriotic American? Really? Does anybody? And you've seen the emails. I know most of you must get them. I get hundreds and hundreds of emails every day, and you've seen the blogs filled with the hate and the innuendo, and you've heard the Mike Savages and the Bill Cunninghams. You've already heard most of the right-wing talk show hosts spewing their hatreds for anyone running for president who isn't a white man and doesn't share their radical neocon, hateful, selfish views. And it was last week, early last week, perhaps the end of the week before, I'm not sure. I went to see it for myself on the Tennessee Republican Party website. They used the smear in a press release titled, quote, "Anti-Semites for Obama," end quote, which it later revised. I invited the man who posted that for the Tennessee Republican Party, I invited him on this program to debate me about it. I invited him on this program to repeat his charge that Barack Obama is an anti-Semite. They declined. And I guess we all know why. And I know you all know about that absolutely certifiable Bill Cunningham of WLW in Cincinnati. You know, he raised the innuendo while speaking at a John McCain rally. And McCain had to quickly go out and apologize for the remark. And let's talk about Cunningham's credibility here. I know a lot of you, especially those of you who live up in Ohio and Kentucky and Tennessee and Indiana and that area, WLW is a big 50,000-watt boomer up there. And Cunningham is known as a household name up there. God only knows why. He's an idiot. He's a flaming freaking idiot, Bill Cunningham is. If you would sit down, and I have, and have a conversation with Bill Cunningham, and I have with some other broadcasters a long time ago, you would soon pick up on the fact that Bill Cunningham is nothing but a mouth. He opens it and doesn't care what comes out of it. He doesn't think. He has no credibility with anybody that thinks at all. And it just shocks me that anybody in the Cincinnati area and anybody within the listening area, that huge 50,000-watt WLW radio up there, would pay any credence toward anything that Bill Cunningham would ever say. But what does it say about his credibility when he's up on the stage, you know, giving it to Barack Obama, up there introducing McCain, fighting for McCain, putting down Obama, and, you know, the next day he's saying, well, you know, pretty much to hell with McCain, I'm going to campaign for Hillary Clinton. First of all, she didn't want Bill Cunningham campaigning for her. And secondly, what kind of a moron goes through a couple of days like that? One day he's for McCain, he's an avowed far, far right-wing neocon. Nobody can deny that. And the next day he says he's for Hillary Clinton. Bill, Whatever credibility you had is gone. Oh, you may keep it in Cincinnati, I suppose. That's a right-wing heaven. There's no question about that. And then I know you all saw the Republican Congressman Jack Kingston went on the air with Dan Abrams, and I caught it right away, and I know that when Dan saw it, he was probably frothing at the mouth waiting to get at him, but that idiot Congressman Jack Kingston went on national TV to falsely claim that Obama would not say the Pledge of Allegiance, and he was whining that Obama doesn't wear the American flag pin, and Abrams looked at him, and he noted that, hey, you're not wearing one. You're not wearing one. Oh, I will wear one, and I have worn one, and I will. He was completely caught. You talk about getting caught with your pants down. Well, he did right there. You talk about looking like an idiot. Kingston really did, and that gives you an idea of what we're dealing with here. And so far, I've been pleased with the way the Obama campaign has effectively fought against the dirty Republican smears with several tacts. And Obama often rebuts the charges in campaign speeches, and his aides are really good. He's got a great campaign, and I'm not endorsing Obama here. Whichever one of these people comes out as the winner is fine with me. But his aides are really quick to circulate fact sheets and get letters out from the clergy and the generals, and his internet team is just great. They bought Google ads targeting smear searches in order to draw the curious to a fact page that they've got out with videos of Obama reciting the pledge on the Senate floor. They've been very, very good about that, much better than the Gore campaign, much better than the Kerry campaign, right up to the moment with everything on it. So I've got to hand it to them. They've done a great job. And Obama also speaks out on bigotry against a whole range of groups, including Muslims and immigrants. And in a major speech this month, for example, Obama criticized the exploitation of fear to turn people against each other. He said, fear can cloud our judgment, and suddenly we start scapegoating gay people or immigrants or people who don't look like us or Muslims because our own lives aren't going very well, he said. He's been standing up for high principles, and I think he's done a good job of it. And Naomi Klein had an article in The Nation. I love Naomi's writings. And she said, and let me quote her, she says, so far Obama's campaign has responded with aggressive corrections that tout his Christian faith, attack the attackers, and channel a cooperative witness before the House Un-American Activities Committee. Barack has never been a Muslim or practiced any other faith beside Christianity, states one fact sheet. I am not and never have been of the Muslim faith, Obama told a Christian news reporter. And, of course, Obama has to correct the record, but he doesn't have to stop there. One of the faux pas they've made, I think, in this campaign's response, that it leaves unchallenged the disgraceful and racist premise behind the entire Muslim smear. And she goes on to say that being a Muslim is a de facto source of shame. Obama's supporters often say they're being swift-boated, casually accepting the idea that being accused of Muslimhood is tantamount to being accused of treason. Well, that's where the right's coming from with this, and you know that. They're saying that if you are a Muslim, you are a traitor. But the Obama folks have aggressively corrected the record, and his campaign has also emphasized that there's nothing wrong with being a Muslim. And you all remember about how Gore was attacked as being a serial exaggerated, and that used to just drive me nuts when they'd come on there and repeat that about how he'd claimed that he invented the internet. And we know that it was absolutely wrong, that he had never said that. But it started in the press. That's what I mean. Once it gets started, you can't get it back again. And Kerry was presented as a guy who misrepresents his record. And once that got out, they couldn't stop it. They didn't make a good enough attempt to stop it. And this smear about being a Muslim, they're trying to suggest that Obama has something to hide. And the smear operatives, long after CNN debunked a false story about Obama attending a Muslim school, that site InsideMag.com, which is a far-right website. Its editor told the Washington Post that Muslim heritage was not so much the issue. The real issue, he claimed, was Obama's supposed concealment and deception about his youth. Obviously, the editor of InsideMag.com, Jeffrey Kuhner, has no credibility whatsoever, and it's good to see that the Obama campaign is really focused on quickly and bluntly responding to these ridiculous charges. So I do believe that if Obama gets the nomination, I think that without question we're going to see the deep-rooted racism and bigotry of the neocon movement come to the forefront. It's laying there at all times, and it'll rise up, and I think we're going to see the dirtiest campaign in our nation's history. And I don't think that, I think there's nothing in the way of hatred and racism that'll be too far for Obama's Republican rivals to travel. I think they'll let it all hang out to hang on to the White House at any cost. And it's already begun in earnest. And mark my word, it'll gradually intensify. And it'll intensify until this country either becomes even more divided than it is right now, and God help us if that happens, or maybe, just maybe, Americans will wake up and realize what filthy propaganda is coming from the far right and repudiate their tactics and their ugly ways once and for all. I happen to think that when America finally takes the step of electing a woman or a black man to the Oval Office, that our nation will have taken a huge, huge step toward finally maturing and seeing the president as a leader, as our commander-in-chief, without regard to whether or not the president is a man, a woman, a Christian, Muslim, a gay. Maybe we can get to the point in this country we won't even discuss that about our president because it doesn't matter anymore. Maybe we'll just see him as the president. Maybe the people of this nation will finally start seeing each other as just people. Just fellow human beings. And forget these prejudices we've harbored for so long. I'm proud of my country. I always have been. But until the day comes when we can rid ourselves of the hatred for anybody different, I'll never be as proud of this nation as I could be. And I'm looking forward to the day when we can shake off some of these stupid things that we've done, and we don't need to talk about whether somebody's black or white or a man or a woman is our leader, because I don't care, and I don't think any of us should care about that. But how many years will it be before we get over all that? I had hoped it would be in my lifetime. I'm beginning to think it won't be. Someday it will come. Just had hoped I would live to see it, but I don't think that's going to happen. I'm going to pause for a quick break right now. We'll be right back.
Round up the usual suspects.
Hi, boys and girls. This is Rick Goodner, part of the Weekend Wrecking Crew. And I'm here to tell you that you cannot miss Billy Shears. The man knows his music. The man knows what you're thinking. Tune in and listen. You'll be surprised. He's going to play the very song that you were thinking that you needed to hear. He's a genius. Maybe a bit psychic. I promise you. Tune in on the weekend, listen to Billy Shear's Night Sounds, and you will hear the song you've been waiting to hear. And you'll enjoy your time as much as I do. Right here on the Horn Head On Radio Network. Make sure you don't miss what you've been waiting to hear with Billy Shear.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Play it, Sam. Play as time goes by.
How can I be sure? In a world that's constantly changing, how can I be sure where I stand with you? Whenever I am away from you, I want to die. 'Cause you know I want to stay with you. How do I know? Maybe you're trying to use me. Flying too high, don't confuse me. Touch me, but don't take me down. Whenever I am away from you, my alibi is telling me that I don't care for you. Maybe I'm just hanging around with my head up, upside down. It's a pity, oh yeah, can't seem to find somebody good as wonderful, baby, as you. How can I be sure? I really, really wanna know. Oh, I really, really, really wanna know, oh, yeah. How's the weather? Whether or not we're together. I love you forever. You know where I can be found. How can I be sure? In a world that's constantly changing, how can I be sure? I'll be sure with you.
In Iraq, my administration looked at the intelligence, and we saw a threat. Members of Congress looked at the intelligence, and they saw a threat. The United Nations Security Council looked at the intelligence, and it saw a threat.
Very funny.
Tell us what you think. Call Guy James now, 1-866-546-5254.
Hey, you betcha, the phone lines are open. We welcome you to give us a call and throw your 2 cents, maybe 3 cents worth in on the conversation today. Good to be back with you here live. We're coming to you live from Southwest Florida today, where it is a beautiful day. It really is. I was noticing up in Ohio, and by the way, congratulations to my old high school basketball team. They're in the Sweet 16 for the third year in a row. God. In overtime the other night, no less. I know you don't care about that, but 'tis true. We were talking, a couple of them are listening. We were talking about the smear machine that the right wing always cranks up against the left. And it's been in high gear for some time now, but they'll shift into warp speed here before long. You know that. Everybody knows that. They've been sharpening their knives for a long time. And wouldn't it be great to just have an old-fashioned debate and where we talk about the issues and, you know, let the best man or the best woman win, and we could forget all the damn spin and the lies and the distortions of people's records and just, you know, have an electorate who's informed, intelligent, and elect a competent person as a president. You know, you stop and think. What does it say about our nation? And I have been so ashamed of the fact, and I know many of you feel the same way I do. You've expressed it to me. I have been just mortified and ashamed of the fact since the very day that Junior Bush took office. I have been so ashamed that that man was in the White House. I mean, we all knew, not we all, maybe that's an exaggeration, but many of us knew what kind of a president he would be. We predicted it. We said it. He was a guy without the intelligence. He was a guy without the curiosity. He was a guy without the leadership skills. He was a guy totally unprepared. You know, they can talk about Obama's lack of experience all they want to. There has never been anybody sit in the Oval Office with fewer skills to have that job than Junior George W. Bush. There's never been anybody back through the annals of our history that's been less competent, than's been less ready to take that job. Nobody. And don't get me wrong here. I am not saying that it takes a great deal of experience or whatever to end up being a great president. I don't think that's necessarily true. It makes people feel comfortable knowing that you've got a great statesman and all that, and somebody with a lot of experience under their belt. But it doesn't necessarily translate into being a great president. And you can also look back through history on that one. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't have any notes here about it. But I believe it was James Buchanan who wasn't a very good president. History hasn't been kind to James Buchanan. I'm pretty sure James Buchanan. But I'm thinking he was in the House of Representatives for 11 years, maybe in the Senate for a dozen years. He was an ambassador for 3 or 4 years. He was Secretary of State for 4 years, and then he became the President of the United States. How could you get more qualified than that or have more experience than that? And still, his presidency laid an egg. He wasn't the kind of guy that had the leadership skills. So I'm not one of those ones that's going to get on that bandwagon and say he doesn't have enough experience. I believe Barack Obama has got good leadership skills. I believe that he's got pretty doggone good judgment. I mean, he's made some mistakes. Certainly one came to light today. It's probably the biggest faux pas of the Obama campaign so far, and I don't know who let this one get out, but about him saying that he pushed the wrong button several times on some issues while he was voting. Pushed the wrong button. I got to admit, that was a good... Somewhere here, where do I have that? I'm pretty sure I've got a clip from this morning here. Where is that? Here we go. I don't know how many of you know about this push the wrong button thing, but Obama was trying to explain away the fact that on some of his votes, and he said, oh, gee, I didn't mean to do that. I pushed the wrong button. So here's a little thing, I think, from Joe Scarborough's program this morning.
Is these reports coming out that he bungled votes, that he pushed the wrong button. Have you seen this?
And no, he's not saying that, is he?
He's
saying that he pushed the wrong button.
At least five times during his 8 years in the state office, Obama cast a vote and then said he had hit the wrong button.
No, he did not.
Uh-huh.
No, Joe, you voted.
Yeah.
How often did you hit the wrong button?
I voted tens of thousands of times. You know, there is a green button that says yay.
Yeah.
And there's a red button that says nay. And then there's a yellow button that says...
So like March 11th, 1999, vote against legislation to end good behavior credits on felons. I pressed the wrong button on that, he said. I pressed the wrong button by accident.
Come on, Barack. That's weak.
Come on. What are you doing?
But apparently
doing?
He tried to change it after. I mean, I don't know. Anyhow.
Oh,
hey, Schuster,
we need an explanation
can Schuster weigh
on that.
In on this?
David Schuster, what about this? Barack Obama votes. He passes on a lot of votes.
Well, no. I think that's...
No, he passed. He voted president on a lot of votes.
Okay. It was a small amount.
And now, it wasn't a small amount.
And it was, there were legal issues involving some of those
presidents. Okay. All I can say is I cast thousands and thousands of votes. I don't think I ever voted president. But anyway, maybe they do things differently in Illinois. But here, now we have a story that from the L.A. Times suggesting that Barack Obama... said he accidentally pressed the wrong button in casting votes while he was in the Illinois State Legislature.
Schuster.
You know what, Joe? If this story is true, it is outrageous. I mean, how can Barack Obama, who's now running for the president, have pushed the wrong buttons? I mean, that's your key. I mean, it's not as if he had all these other distractions. Your job as a state legislature or a member of the U.S. Senate is to know exactly what you're voting on. And if you don't know what you're voting on or you're confused, then you ask somebody. But to push the wrong button and then to say, oh, you know, I was confused and made a mistake. No, that is not acceptable. You're running for the president. You need to be prepared. You need to know. You need to take your positions seriously and know exactly what you're doing. And I think, I mean, if the story is true, I just think it's inexcusable.
It seems like a silly excuse, actually, to try to...
silly wouldn't cover it. That's a dumb move right there. I don't know who in the campaign decided to throw that out there, but that's probably the worst mistake that the Barack Obama campaign has made so far. And hey, we're fair on this show. We'll point out everybody's mistakes. We're not going to throw mud at anybody, but that was pretty dumb. You have to admit. I don't care who it is. If I said that, I'd have to say it was pretty dumb. How do you explain that away? You know, you got the nuclear football and you say, oh, damn, I pushed the wrong button. I don't know. Anyway, I'm sure they'd like to have that one back again. That was a beauty. I'm sure they're probably trying to explain that away right now. Maybe if I were them, I'd just ignore that one. Let it go away. Hey, every campaign, everybody says stupid stuff in their campaign. I'd say that I don't know about John Kennedy if he ever said anything stupid. Of course, they didn't have the coverage in those days that they have now where they cover every last second of your campaign. You can't say anything stupid. I mean, we had what's-his-name here a while back with his macaca moment, and we've just had them all say something really dumb. And Al Gore said dumb stuff. John Kerry certainly said dumb stuff. Junior Bush is, of course, you could collectively put all the dumb stuff together and it wouldn't equal what Junior Bush said. Did you see where he said that it was a mistake? Said it was a mistake for OPEC not to raise their oil production levels. A mistake? He said, how could they do that to their number one customer and knowing that our economy's in a slowdown? It's a mistake for them to do that to their number one customer. Well, guess what, Junior? What are you going to do about it, huh? What have you done about it, buddy? Didn't you tell us that before you got elected that you and Dickie Boy had all this experience in the oil business and that you were the first MBA president and that you understood business? And hasn't your family been friends with the goddamn Saudis for how long now? And you can't talk them into lowering, raising the production of oil, you idiot? Oh, that burns me when I heard him say that. Bragged and bragged and bragged about the influence he had with the Saudis. They're good friends. You've all seen them holding hands with the prince, the Saudi prince. You've seen those pictures. The Bushes have been in bed with the Saudi family for how long? But that's just a personal relationship, right? That's about their own family wealth. That's got nothing to do with the good of the United States. So Junior Bush can't talk them into doing anything now, can he? No. And when it comes right down to it, I wonder if he even wants to. The fool. And no, I'm not being disrespectful of the presidency when I say that. The man is a fool. That press conference he had last week, my God, was embarrassing. I heard that Lewis Black, that comedian that gets all whipped out of shape, bent out of shape. Said, I watched that press conference last week. And I watched Bush speak. And I realized that one of us was nuts. And for the first time in my life, I realized it wasn't me. So I thought that was a pretty funny bit. But you think that every time that you watch this guy get up and talk. And that's why this story today just turned my crank when I said, well, you know, it's a mistake for the Saudis. I bet the Saudis will laugh their asses off over that one. Yeah, Junior, what are you going to do about it? Huh? Exactly right. Jersey said on the chat room, said he would lean on the Saudis if he had to keep gasoline cheap. Boy, that lean is really working well, isn't it? As they say these days, how's that working out for you, Junior? That lean is really working out well. It's absolutely fascinating when you take a look at this whole thing and see the ineptness of this administration. I'm sure in this whole oil deal, there's a lot of corruption involved someplace. I'm sure that the Bush family has vastly enriched themselves during this whole thing. And the American public, well, eat it, boys. We'll be out of office soon, and we'll be building our library down there in Texas, and that's another thing. Knowing what we know. We all know it's out there for him to see, and there's not going to be another Junior Bush or Daddy Bush run for president, and I don't even think that the Jebster have the nerve to try it now. So this whole Bush thing, God help us, I think it's finally over with. So who would be the dumbasses that would contribute to a Bush library in Texas? Who would be the dumbasses that would do that, and why would they do it? Hmm? I do wonder about things like that. I just wonder. There's nothing to be gained in the future, probably. I don't think. God, I hope not. I hope we don't see another Bush run for president. It would have to be Jeb. And, you know, you want to talk corruption. Don't get me started. Jeb's the smart one of the bunch. He knows how to do the really good corruption, the kind of, you know. Well, we're going to, where'd the first hour go? We're going to pause for news at the top of the hour. Get yourself a Coke or something. Peanut butter and jelly sandwich. No, that'll ruin your supper. Don't do that. We'll be right back after the news. Stay with us.
News brief brought to you by the International News Net.
In Iraq Monday, 102 Iraqis were killed and 120 wounded. Among the dead are a woman and her children accidentally targeted by British troops in Basra. Wrapping up a two-day visit to Baghdad, Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad lent $1 billion to Iraq on Monday and told America to go home. Iran announced it will expel all 1.5 million illegal Afghans within its borders. Kabul said it could not cope with such a high number of returnees. Vanity Fair magazine has exposed a secret project backed by George Bush for the armed overthrow of the Hamas government in Gaza. Based on confidential documents, the magazine says Bush and Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice agreed to a plan for the chief of the Palestinian Authority, Mahmoud Abbas, to remove the Hamas authorities in Gaza. The report confirms allegations by Hamas that the U.S. has been providing Fatah fighters with weapons and money to topple the Hamas government. The magazine reveals three confidential memos that describe the covert plan. One memo, drawn up by the State Department, asserts that means had to be found to produce an end game by the end of 2007 for Abbas to remove Hamas from power by collapsing the government, and that Abbas must be given the means to strengthen his forces.
Top of the hour news brought to you by INN World Report.
Russian President Dmitry Medvedev's overwhelming victory in Sunday's presidential election was soured by allegations of manipulation and vote rigging. International parliamentary observers also failed to give the election a clean bill of health. Communist Party leader Gennady Zyuganov said, "We have evidence of falsification of the elections and we will go to court." Vladimir Churov, the head of Russia's Central Election Commission, said that all complaints would be investigated. Zyuganov did not give precise details of his allegations, but there were persistent reports of staff coming under pressure from employers to vote for the United Russia candidate, the party of Medvedev. In some places, activists were said to have been buying votes for as little as $15. There were also fears that the count in some places had been compromised, with figures being changed to meet centrally imposed targets.
Talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back to the show. Good to have you with us today. Where does the time go? One of those days when the first hour of the program just flew by. Hey, join us Join us. The phones are working just fine. 866-546-5254. That's 866-546-5254. It's a toll-free call. And speaking of toll-free calls, did anybody see this new little gadget? Now I forgot the name of it. Cost you $19 a year for all the long distance you want. You just put it in the USB port of any high-speed computer. And it's not Skype or anything, and you can plug a regular phone into it. It's really really amazing. You get started for about $39. You get the gadget and the first year's service for like $39, and I'll get the name of that. Magic Stick or something like that. It's called. Amazing little outfit. Really is better, much better than Skype or any of those. So look into it. I first found out about it. I couldn't sleep the other night and turned the TV on and saw an infomercial about 3:30 in the morning, and I ended up looking this thing up. And it's for real. Got great reviews, by the way, by all the techies out there. I was looking at the CNN website and their financial news and all, and I saw one of the most ridiculous headlines. It says, housing, best time to buy in 4 years. You think? You think it's a really good time to buy? Best time in 4 years? Hell, I'd say it's the best time in 40 years. Best time to buy a house in 4 years. Well, that's all well and good. First of all, who's got the money to go buy a house now? And secondly, if you got an old house that you got to get rid of, God help you. Especially around here. The area I live in here is one of the hardest hit in the entire country as far as declining values of homes, like up to 40% here in the last couple of years. So it's critical. But CNN says the best time to buy a house in 4 years. Let me ask you a question. I was thinking about this earlier today. Prices are dropping. It may not be so bad where you are, but like I said, 30, 40% here in Southwest Florida and some other areas around the country as well. Why would you hang on to a big mortgage? If you got a big mortgage on a house and you're struggling to hang on to the house and everything and you're upside down in it like a lot of people are now, that's why we're having the massive number of foreclosures. Why wouldn't you just hang in there? Why would you just hang in there and keep that house when you could dump it? And 'cause you're not going to get any appreciation on it for, who knows, if you bought it 2-3 years ago and you still got that huge mortgage and the value is, you're way upside down in it, but you don't want to get foreclosed upon, you don't want to give it up, you're minus equity in a huge way, it's going to be many years before you get any real equity in the house. Why wouldn't you just let it go and go rent a place? Because with the property prices going down so much, rentals are going to be far more affordable than owning a house. You know, that old American dream might be something that's of owning a home might be end up being something that's pretty stupid right now. I don't know, for a lot of people anyway, not for everybody certainly. I don't know. I'm not an economist. I don't know the answer to these questions. Sometimes just asking rhetorical questions, wanting to know what you think about it. It just seems odd to me. If the bottom falls out and the vultures will come in and buy up the real estate, which they will, makes you wonder why people just don't let them go and rent. I don't know. A lot of things involved in that for sure. Have you been out to vote yet today? If you haven't, if you're in Vermont, if you're in Rhode Island, if you're in Ohio, or if you're in Texas, get your ass out and vote. No, don't sit there and finish watching the soap operas. I need a ride down. Get a ride. Get down there and vote. Do your thing. Vote for whichever one of these candidates you think is the best. And one of them is gonna float to the top here pretty soon. Do you think if Hillary loses Texas today, she'll quit? I don't. Unless it's a big defeat of some kind, I don't know. And if she wins Ohio and Texas and Rhode Island and loses Vermont, which she surely will lose Vermont, I predicted she'd lose at Vermont by about 28 points. So we shall see. I predicted she'd win Ohio, and I predicted she'd lose Texas by 1 point. So I wonder what will happen. You know, there have been some terrible charges hurled at Hillary Clinton, and I'm not going to sit here and say I'm for this candidate or that, because I haven't. There have been some terrible, unfair things said about both of them, and you know how I feel. I feel that either one of them will make a good president. I'm certainly more than willing to take my chances on either one of them. Of course, we got good old Ralphie Nader running again, and you know how I feel about that. Oh, don't get me started. I wish I hadn't thought about that. My blood boils when I think about Ralph Nader running for president. It just boils. Yes, I'm one of those. I'm one of those. I hate the sight of Ralph Nader. I hate the sound of his voice. I can't stand him. I don't want anything to do with him. I'm not saying he's never done anything good, because he has, but he's certainly screwed things up a whole lot worse than the things he's. Yeah, we got seatbelts on account of Ralph. He started out with that crusade against General Motors on a Corvair. I had a Corvair, and it was a pretty damn good car, I must say. I didn't like him from the very start, but when he gets in and screws up a couple of elections, or at least one, I have no love nor any respect whatsoever for the most ego, man with the most huge ego in the world, Ralph Nader. There's no doubt about it. You ever been around him? You ever got to talk to him? You ever been to a seminar or any kind of a... He's absolutely insufferable. Insufferable. I wouldn't vote for him if he's the only person running. I wouldn't vote for... I'm not going to do that. I wouldn't vote for a thing. I almost said something stupid there. 866-546-5254. You know, I live in an area where we get a lot of visitors, and there's a lot of them here right now. And I really had an interesting weekend this weekend. I spoke to probably around 30 foreigners. I go out of my way to speak to foreigners. And many of them, of course, from England and France and Italy and Canada, and especially the people from Europe right now, this is such a cheap vacation from them. Many of them come here and stay, for the season, as we call it. The season here is the middle of January until after Easter. Many of them come here. Spoke to some folks the other day that have a home in Naples, Florida, and they live in Napoli, in Naples, Italy. How nice. Both of them, not bad places. but, you know, we talked about health care. And I love to talk to these people about health care. Some of them are conservative. Some of them are very liberal people. But I do not, you know, I can listen to Hannity and O'Reilly and all these people you want that criticize national health care or a single payer health care or anything the Democrats are trying to do with health care, and they criticize the French and they criticize the British and they criticize the Canadians' health care. I don't talk to anybody. I have yet to talk to the first person from any of those countries that has a great amount of criticism for their health care system. Why? Because it works. It works. The people from Germany, for example, if you can afford health care there and you've got it through an employer, whatever, fine. If you don't, they've got a government program as well. They've got both kinds. I think that's a good idea. But I've been talking to hundreds of foreigners every year for the past dozen years, and I've never heard anything quite like this year's comments from them. Frankly, I'm ashamed and I'm sad about the perception people from, and it's not just a perception, that people from other countries have about us right now, and it's not all about our foreign policy either. A lot of them have spoken to me about our pitiful, and I do mean pitiful, healthcare system, or as what it really ought to be called, as you know, our sick care system. Let's face it. We have a pay or die health care insurance system in this country, and I was looking up some stats on it the other day. The National Academy of Sciences Institute of Medicine estimates that 18,000 people in the United States die every year because they can't afford health care. 18,000. Think about one of these big NBA basketball arenas that holds 18 or 20,000 people, full of people, and every last one of them in it is going to die this year because they can't afford health care. And these are just the people we know about. There is no other country in the Western world where you die because you can't afford health care. No other. This and what we like to brag about is the richest nation in the world. This with a system that's just okie-dokie with the Republicans, because if you can't pull yourself up by your bootstraps and afford to pay a grand a month for some kind of a decent health care plan, well, then that's just tough luck, Charlie. When are the citizens of this country, the majority of them, going to understand that national health care is in their own self-interest? And when are they going to understand that the big insurance companies are not going to allow their cash cow pay or die system to change without a bloody fight? And we've got a couple of candidates right now that I think are willing to engage them in that bloody fight. And they're right on the chat room. And by the way, if you're listening to this program, you head on over to the Head On Radio Network chat room. Got a good group over there. You learn something from some of these people. And Jersey reminds me, let's state what the Republican health care plan is. Nothing. None. Zip. Nada. Don't even talk about it. Except to denigrate the Democrats for even bringing it up in the first place. These are the compassionate conservatives I'm talking about here. Now, I won't sit here and blame the insurance companies for wanting to keep it the way it is, because some of those boys making some big bucks. The healthcare system these days, there's lots of money flowing through it, and a lot of it is monstrous profits. You've all heard the stories. You've seen Michael Moore's film. You've seen the statistics. You've seen the facts. You've heard the facts of the huge profits being made in the healthcare industry. And what I want to ask is profit more important than people's lives? Evidently, in some quarters, it is. Because the Republicans just aren't even willing to talk about it. They're willing to do nothing about it. They haven't done anything about bringing the cost of healthcare down. They've done nothing and never will do anything about a health care plan. Just isn't right, you see, for some of us to take care of the rest of the people who can't get by on their own. It just isn't right. I don't understand. I try and always look at both sides of an issue. And even if I disagree vehemently with the other side, I at least sometimes can, most of the time, can see where they're coming from. And can see why they're arguing and how they argue, you know, the strength of their argument. But for the life of me, I have never been able to look at our healthcare system in this country and understand how anybody could think that it's even decent. If you've got money, you can have great health insurance, you can have great health care, and you no doubt, on the average, will live longer than people who don't have money. Is that right? In a so-called progressive modern day, in a modern society, is it right for people who have money to live longer than those who don't? I don't think it is right. And somehow, the radical right-wingers, the ones that have control of the microphones and the press in this country, your McConnells from Kentucky and the people that run the Republican politics, somehow your Newt Gingriches, somehow these people have convinced even Republicans with no money and who can't afford health care that they don't need it. Somehow they've been able to do that. And I'm reminded that people in Cuba don't have money and they live longer than we do because they have a health care system for everybody. Now, it may be true, and it is true, that you take the finest health care available in this country and compare it to the finest health care available in any other country, we probably come out on top of with that. We probably do. But you see, you can only get the finest health care in this country is if you've got money. You can only get the finest health care in this country if you can afford insurance or if you get it from your employer. If you can't, you're dead, baby. You're dead. I cannot understand, I will never understand the utter disdain that the wealthy people in this country seem to have for the working poor. I don't get it. I'm a student of history, and I look back at this, and I see the attitude the wealthy in this country have for the poor, and in another time in history, this is no different. It's comparable than and to how the Nazis believed in Aryan superiority. They were superior to other people. And they wanted to kill and get rid of those that didn't fit into the mold with them. And that's almost the way, that's almost the attitude that I'm seeing today. I had firsthand knowledge of this recently, talking to somebody who's extremely wealthy that has no comprehension of how things are for the working man today. No comprehension at all. Spoke to someone very wealthy recently. And I talked to him about somebody that was having a hard time physically and couldn't afford the health care. And he said, well, you know, why don't they cash in some of their portfolio? Ask me that. Actually said that. Why don't they cash in some of their portfolio? Portfolio, hell, they can't afford to file that anything to go in it. Fascinating to me that anybody could say that. And it's fascinating to me that there's that much of a disconnect going on in this country. The destruction of the middle class is it's real. It's happening. Our health care systems, private or public, well, you know, why does it have to be one or the other? And again, the people in Germany, they've got both. Why can't that happen here in the so-called greatest country in the world? If you work and or you can't afford, you can afford private health insurance, then good for you. Nothing should change. But for God's sake, find a way to offer a humane solution for those of us who are not covered. And there are, what, 47 million? And you know how the Republicans are fond of saying, well, a lot of those people just don't want health insurance. Yeah, well, how many? Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, it's Sandra. How's it going?
Hi, Sandra.
You know, it's the will to power. You know how it is up in this country.
Sure.
People don't give a F. I mean, you know, you want to sit around and think that there is some community, but that comment you made about some guy saying for somebody to cash in their point, I mean, the disconnect is stunning.
Oh, you should have seen my face, probably. What?
No, it's just sort of mind-blowing, but I don't know what's going on in this country, why people are so reluctant to embrace just basic health care. It's like some sort of Hobbesian nightmare here, you know. If you're, like, doing okay, you know, you're hanging on to it for dear life, and anybody who needs something is, like, a direct threat. I mean, I thought this was a community. You know what I'm saying? I'm not at war with everybody.
That's a word I'm afraid has become an obsolete community.
Well, Well, the thing is, though, is that, you know, like you said, you're a student of history. And, you know, when you have these sort of discrepancies like we're getting, you know, a society can't last forever. Look at Rome, you know?
Yeah. And it will not. It will not.
It won't. And people are so ill-informed here that I think that it all can just implode, and I don't even think most of these people know what to hit them.
Let me ask you, Sanders, something I was talking about a little earlier today. Do you still get any, do you get any of these right-wing emails I was talking about floating around that still push the propaganda about Obama and Hillary and all that?
Yeah, no, I have gotten a few, but I just, why? What, you want to know if they're still around?
Oh, they're still around. I was just mentioning. I wonder just if I get them because I do a talk show, or I wonder how prolific they actually are out in the, you know, in the populace. Is everybody still getting them? Because I get them on a regular basis. And
well, I've gotten them a couple of times, but, I mean, I have a couple of email accounts, and one that I just sort of gave up because it got, you know, inundated by the... Because I try to make that email known to various different kinds of group, you know thy enemy type thing, right? Mm-hmm. So I have gotten some of those, but not like steady.
Yeah, they're still out there. They're still floating around, even though all of them have been debunked.
Well, no, but the thing is that I'm kind of just disturbed by the. He's a Muslim bigotry. It just keeps popping up, and thankfully he said, well, it's insulting to Muslims, too. At least he said that, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I have to say, I was, you know, it's so disturbing because I was actually surprised that he said that. That's how far they've, you know, sort of propagandized us, you know?
He probably, on a political note, probably had to sit and think about whether he even ought to comment on it.
Exactly.
Isn't
that's
that sad?
Saying. That's what I mean. That's why I was surprised. You know, and it's sort of, I was encouraged by that because I'm not too sure what to make of the whole thing. I find, I'm not too sure about Obama, you know, or Clinton at this point. But I am sure about the media, and they're just not our friends. You know what I'm saying?
Certainly not.
I don't know what to, I don't trust it. It seems really manipulated now and not working towards our interests. Do you have any idea whose interests they're working towards?
I would say it's that upper 1% that we're always talking about.
Well, you know, I am so, the thing is, it's like, I am so sick to death. That's what I think about the rich is that they're making a mistake because, see, I'd rather not be thinking about them, Guy. You know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
But the fact that they're so pervasive now and so overreaching, I don't think that's in their best interest, and I think they don't realize. And that's how things, you know, get kind of like... the French Revolution.
Yeah, and you see, you know, I was thinking just now when you mentioned that, Sandra, I was thinking about being down in Charleston a while back and noticing some of the big mansions that had barbed wire and glass on the top of their shattered glass into the cement around the walls in their house because they wanted to keep out you know who. They wanted to keep out anybody that was different than them, anybody that was poor. And, you know, it'll come to that again. It will.
It is also a thing that's happening if you look at sort of urban planning type. I'm a real nerd, so I look at stuff like that. You know, the suburbs are becoming the new ghetto. And all the rich are moving back into the city. But the problem is the housing that's left out there is a bunch of crap. It's not built like the cities used to be. You see what I mean?
Right.
So it's just going to be some sort of hideous nightmare for the working people and poor as they get pushed out of the urban areas. Because, you know, there's a huge sort of buildup of some of the major urban centers. I mean, look at I don't know if you've been to Manhattan recently, but that's for the rich, by the rich. When I went to New York the first time, you know, you had 42nd Street. It was rough. You know, it just has some character. Now, it really is. Wow.
Oh, I was just there in December, and I enjoyed looking at the want ads for some of these new high-rise apartments that they've built and places in the Trump Tower and some of those, the unbelievable. I saw one, it said starting at $18,000 a month.
I mean, yeah, you know, and it's the same thing. I have some friends in London, you know, who my one friend does quite well, but she's telling me that the discrepancies even there are starting to translate into random robberies and, you know, sort of street crimes that they had never seen before, which is a direct result of this inequality that's, you know, starting to seep into every city everywhere in the Western world, you know?
Absolutely. Let them eat cake, you know?
Well, and I just, you know, and I, you know, part of me just thinks, well, let me just buy me a few more, you know, weapons and hide out.
Well, some of these days, you never know.
It's... Anyway, I'm glad to hear that you, I don't know, have you been on vacation or something?
Yes, a couple of weeks, and
okay, well,
we're back today.
I'll be checking back in again.
All right, Sandra, good to hear from you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. You stop and think about the disparity, not only just in the health care, but, you know, the wealth in this country. Man, oh, man, oh, man, it's just getting completely out of control. And I know we talk about it a lot, but it's getting exponentially worse. We're going to take a quick break right now, and we'll be back.
All on the tees off.
Hey, Katie, you really look great tonight. About you all the time, you color up my life. Just maybe,
maybe
you let me take you home tonight. I've gotta have you by my side to wake up with the sunrise. It's hard to drive when you're putting on your makeup. Can't stay in the line. Shaping up my heart for all the love I'll be giving to you. I knew it from the start, the star in role for my movie was you. I'm playing it tough so you can't change your mind. Hey, Katie,
Katie.
About 6 o'clock tonight, I'll be waiting by the curbside. Practicing my lines.
What are you talking about?
Just maybe, maybe you can help me hit my mark. And I can try to play the part, memorizing lines. You could be me a pharaoh. I can be Billy Joe. Shaping up my heart. Stop the star and roll for my movie was you. I'm playing it tough so you can't change your mind.
Sailing somewhere.
The Head On Radio Network. The Horn.
Tune in to Fox Dop this Thursday midnight Eastern, where you'll hear my series titled Lennon on Lennon, Blame It on Rio. Part 1 features John's first interview in 5 years, just days before his death.
I started from the Mother album onwards, trying to shave off all imagery, pretensions of poetry, illusions of grandeur, I call a la Dylan, Dylan-esque.
So be there this Thursday, midnight Eastern, on Fox Top. This is Billy Shears, and hey, thanks for lending an ear.
Thank you, Billy. Billy Shears, the great Billy Shears. And do tune into his program. Billy knows how to handle the music genre, that's for sure. Music director for the Guy James Show, Billy Shears. Welcome to the program, everybody. We do hope you'll give us a call, 866-546-5254. We're back after a couple of weeks hiatus. Little R&R and all that sort of thing. And we're glad to have all of you back with us. I see we have a nice audience today. We've been talking about politics today, of course. Hey, one thing I do have to mention. Maybe it'll mean something to some of you, maybe not. You can't please everybody. But I see Melanie Morgan. Melanie Morgan, the beloved Melanie Morgan of KSFO in San Francisco, got fired. They said it was because of budgetary concerns that they're cutting their budget. Melanie Morgan, that bitch that's on the... I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say that, but it just came out. It happens when I talk about Melanie Morgan. I'm sure you, many of you know who Melanie Morgan is. Kind of talks out of the side of her mouth, you know. What a sweetheart. Anyway, she got fired. And... I feel so bad. I hope all of you got your voting done today. I hope all of you have been out there. How do you think it's going to turn out today? A poll released this week by Survey USA of New Jersey indicated that registered Republicans would make up 9% of the vote in the Democratic primary in Texas. Republicans voting Michael Baselice, head of Baselice and Associates, a Texas polling firm, said that was in line with what his company was finding. A block that large could make a significant difference for Obama, who holds a lead over Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton, Rodham Clinton of New York among Texas Republicans, especially in a close race. Polls this week were showing a dead heat in Texas as Obama began pulling even with Clinton. Well, so Republicans for Obama. Hey, you know what? I've heard several people I know dyed in the wool Republicans tell me that they would vote for Obama. Yes, sir. And I've just got shocked when they tell me that. Shocked, I tell you. I said, well, you know, I'd vote for Obama. I would not vote for Hillary, but I would vote for Obama. Really, really interesting to see that. No matter how you feel about this primary, and, you know, a lot of you are Obama fans, a lot of you are Hillary fans, some of you aren't fans of either of them, some of you didn't want either one of them. You know, I know, it's a primary. But Obama, and do keep this in mind when we're talking about these superdelegates and all, one little thing that, big thing, in my opinion, that a lot of people have not considered when it comes down to these superdelegates, and I know one of these guys, that Barack Obama, despite being ahead among pledged delegates, actually has fewer total votes among people who identify themselves as Democrats. He's got 7,392,000 votes so far, and Hillary Clinton has 8,229,000. That gives Clinton the lead with 52% of Democrats. And they also break the numbers down by race and point out that Obama has won white Democrats in only two states, New Mexico and Illinois. And so that does help you understand why the party gives so much power to its 796 superdelegates. If they didn't, independents and Republicans could essentially hijack their election. And thanks to Carol for that, for letting us know that. Carol, thanks very much over at make them accountable. Interesting. And the whole ball of wax so far, Hillary has more votes. So the superdelegates, they will certainly consider that. Without question, they will consider that, I'm sure. Don't know what's going to happen. I planned on talking a lot about John McCain today. I don't know if I'll get to it or not. We were talking there a moment ago about the rich just really having it good right now, and the economy after 7 years of absolute foreign policy madness, and Bush's little jaunt into and Cheney's little jaunt into empire building on a mountain of debt. And all this public indulging and private gouging and the banks gouging everybody, the financial crisis and the credit crunch, the dollars you know is going to hell in the handbasket, and the huge prices we're paying for oil, all of that has contributed to the 2008 economic slowdown, which has turned into a bona fide recession and maybe much worse during the course of this coming year. And the downturn in the world stock markets is another clear indication that something is wrong, not only with the U.S. economy, but with the world economy. So here's the skinny. And what I think the whole thing boils down to, once the chain is pulled, the toilet's going to flush, and nobody's going to be able to stop it. And I think we're in for some tough times. Here is our weekly presidential address from Junior.
And now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. The United States economy is a crucial part of our nation, and I am ever mindful of our economic numbers. Many have said our economy is moving into a recession, but I don't believe that's true. Our economy is slowing, taking a breather. I'd say it's headed for a rest up, a ease out, maybe a twiddle down, but not a recession. Typically, a recession follows what they call a declining sink. But we're slipping, not sinking. Our economy remains healthy in a respectable lollygag. The dollar is limp, but flappy. The housing market is just a little droopy, but it remains firmly wobbly. I'm encouraged by that wobbling. It complements the sagging rise in new construction. And with consumer confidence remaining steadfastly dyspeptic, I remain confident that this economic nod-off is nothing more than a blurb hole in the road. Thank you for listening. God bless you.
You know, that guy actually talks better than Junior Bush does, doesn't he? And that's the way they talk about the economy. Well, you know, we got a little bit of slowdown going on. It's not so bad, really. Maybe it'll be a recession someday. We don't know for sure. It's possible it could be. They've run the gamut on their remarks for that. I see oil did drop about $3 a barrel today. The Dow went down about 45 points. Gold went down to clear down to 966. So everybody better. I don't know. Gold dropped a little bit today. Maybe it's time to dump all your gold. I don't know. What do you think? I'm not going to rush out and sell mine today. You know, I have some friends that are jewelers, and they have told me that they've never seen anything like this. People gathering up their gold jewelry, mementos, rings, necklaces, all that stuff, bringing it in to sell. And, of course, I don't have to tell you the jewelers are making a good buck off of that, too. We were talking about all the rich folks and how they're doing so well, and it is pretty obscene. When you live in an area where I live, and I don't live amongst the rich folks, but I live not too far away from them, and I'm talking fabulously wealthy people. I mean, fabulously wealthy. You ought to see the Naples, Florida airport on Friday afternoon. You ought to just see it. Just one private jet after another and after another. You get down a Gulf Drive in a place called Port Royal, which is one of the suburbs of Naples, Florida, on the south side. Lots and lots and lots and lots of houses down there, $15, $20, $30 million. Many, 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 many. And we've got a Ritz-Carlton hotel just right up the road here. And this, nothing exemplifies what I'm trying to tell you here any more than this, called putting on the Ritz. Putting on the Ritz is costing a bit more these days. The Ritz-Carlton Luxury Hotel Empire, Travel and Tourism News reported last week, has spent $360 million on renovations the last 2 years, and hundreds of millions more building brand new luxury units all over the world. And in the new Jakarta Ritz-Carlton, guest rooms all sport sunken marble baths, 300 thread-count linens, and two flat-screen TVs, a 46-incher for dozing off, and a 17-inch model for keeping up to date in the bathroom. The rack rate on the Jakarta Hotel's presidential suite, over $6,200 per night. God, is that all? And Indonesia overall, notes the United Nations Development Program, 52.4% of the population lives on less than $2 a day. And veteran CEO pay critic Grave Crystal is predicting that CEO pay may become a bigger issue in the 2008 presidential campaign than anyone imagined. Only a few companies have so far released executive pay data for 2007, but some trends are already surfacing. Crystal's exhibit A, Tyco International, the New Jersey conglomerate that lost $1.7 billion last year. And amid that carnage, Tyco's CEO, Edward Breen, saw no change in his $1.6 million base salary. But the rest of his 2000 pay package, Crystal points out, soared, starting with a doubling of his annual cash bonus to $3.2 million. In all, Breen took home $33.3 million in compensation last year for running a company that lost $1.7 billion. Incredible. Absolutely incredible. And we were talking earlier about it. If you got money, you live. If you don't, you die, as far as our health care system is concerned. I found this story. He said, could U.S. health care be even more of a mess than average Americans think? Robert Riggs at Dallas TV station, KTVT, thinks so. One of the city's top tax-exempt hospitals, Riggs reports, is routinely giving charity cases the cold shoulder while maintaining an A-list of rich Texans who get special red carpet treatment. Amongst the swells on the UT Southwestern Hospital special assistance list, hedge fund king T. Boone Pickens, Kern Wildenthal, the hospital's $1.2 million a year president. Imagine that, a hospital guy making that kind of money. That's what we were talking about, health care costs. That's ridiculous. Ridiculous. Said he works hard to keep the ultra-affluence happy. He has shelled out, KTVT notes, $160,000 luxury gift wines for the patients. Meanwhile, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation last week released a study that details how America's poor and middle class are so much less healthy than those above them on the economic ladder. The foundation is launching a commission to find out why even Americans with good health insurance have poorer health than the people of other countries. The new Robert Wood Johnson study suggests inequality as one key factor. Observes the report, the income of the wealthiest 20% of Americans have increased dramatically, while the rest of the population has experienced little or no improvement in income. Well, that's not a surprise. If you got money, you live. If you don't, you die. It's that simple in our health care system, again, our sick care system in this country. What a shame. What a shame. We'll be back in just a moment.
She died dreaming of his kiss was honey. Oh, taste more bitter than wine.
Hey, we're back with the rest of the Guy James Show, heading up about, what, about 5 minutes till the hour right now. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello, am I on?
Yes.
Hi, guys. My name is John. I'm from Boston, and actually, I've listened a few times, and I really appreciate the program. I agree with you generally, but there was one thing today that I couldn't quite agree with you totally, and that was the topic of Ralph Nader.
Huh. Well, Ralph stirs the passions of a lot of people.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I didn't vote for him back in 2000. I thought he was a fool for doing what he did. I agree 100% with you there. And the problem with Ralph Nader, actually, it's not a Ralph Nader problem, is that what he's saying is correct. As a messenger, he may be a fool, but his message is correct. In other words, this man is a real progressive. And the best way to take the steam away from somebody like Ralph Nader is to adopt this program. Now, the Democratic Party wouldn't touch his program for all the tea in China. And that shows a certain amount of, you know, I don't know what you'd call it on the part of the Democratic Party. Neither candidate will talk about it. And just two issues in particular, probably the two biggest issues in the country, namely health care and the Iraq War. I mean, on the Iraq War, Ralph Nader would get us out overnight. Well, consistent, of course, with troop safety, withdrawal of troop safety. He would probably get us out in 6 months. I mean, the last man, he closed down that big monster that they have going, that gigantic embassy. In fact, Ralph Nader will probably go one step beyond. And don't get me wrong, I'm not going to vote for Ralph Nader. All right? I still think that it's better to vote for one of the, either Obama or Clinton, rather than risk getting some bozo like John McCain in there.
Well, that's, you know, I'll concede those points to you. You're correct, and I agree with you. I think a lot of things ideas that he has are good. I just think he's gone about it wrong, and I don't know what the right way is. I just don't like the result of what he's done, and he knew those would be the results. He knew it. That's my bone of contention with him. And you're right. You know, with this recent telecom mess. Now, the Democrats in Congress are going to let that go through. You know they're going to let it go. They never planned on blocking it, and they know it's wrong. They know it is, and yet they won't stand up like Democrats and fight it. I don't know.
Well, these Democrats are no longer the Democrats you're remembering, guy.
No.
The Democratic Party of Franklin Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Things have changed.
You're right.
That's
you're absolutely
really
right.
What we probably need in this country is a whole bunch of things. I mean, you have to have a real overhaul of the government. You need direct election of the president. You need proportional representation, some kind of parliamentary system. I would take these two political parties and flush them down the nearest toilet. I mean, I can't even comment on the Republican Party. There's so much contempt I have for them. But for the Democratic Party, I tell you, they're beginning to run a close second, and that bothers me very much because they talk a blue streak. And they produce really nothing. In fact, this time they're not even talking a blue streak. The two biggest, the two contenders, Clinton and Obama, neither one of them is anywhere on the healthcare thing. I mean, I guess Obama talks about not even making it mandatory, and Hillary Clinton talks about making it mandatory, but they still factor in the insurance companies. Well, the insurance companies, they're a giant parasite. They're just vampiring away at
the
country's blood.
Yeah,
it's awful.
They're going to keep sucking that blood. They really are. Hey, we're up against the clock at the top of the hour. I invite you to call back anytime. Good to hear from you. You're in Boston?
Yeah, I'm in Boston, guys.
Okay, good to hear from you. Thanks so much.
Listen, thank you for your program.
Sure, thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Well, we're down to that time of the day. Where does it go? Thanks for the call, John. Good to hear from Beantown. And I agree. The Democrats aren't what they ought to be right now. I keep hoping that we can kick them in the ass and make them be what they need to be, what we want them to be, the Party of Roosevelt again. Someday. I keep hoping. I keep working towards that. Hey, thanks for listening to the program today. Don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Thanks, everybody. See you tomorrow.